You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee. And we'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualified and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the garage.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me.
Out for so. You. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. Then you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover.
8 minutes, I'm sorry, 10 minutes after 8 o'clock here on a Tuesday morning. Feels like Monday. Joining me from the state of Texas is Tim Lynch, son of Jarvis Lynch, and nephew of, you call him Uncle Chad, right?
Yeah, I call him Chad.
Lieutenant Colonel Chad Lynch, who will forever be famous, not for his two trips to Vietnam, but doing 100 Keiko Gauls on a recruiting assignment in 1968 in upstate New York. So he's a bit of an All Marine Radio legend. Tim Lynch joins us, United States Marine Corps retired, infantry officer. And I can't get a hold of Duffy White yet. So I want to talk about Memorial Day for a weekend. Did you do anything exciting? You're doing a little bit of the Lord's work down in what part of Texas are you in? South Texas? What do they call that?
Yeah, South Texas. They call it the Valley. So I'm right in the middle of the Rio Grande Valley, which is on the eastern coast.
Oh,
where I was, by the way, I was at the beach for the weekend.
At the beach for the weekend. I had a bit of an epiphany, and I'll ask you about it. I said this for publication, as I tend to do. You have to put Memorial Day in its appropriate context. It's not for us, all right? It's not a tribal event, okay? It is for the it's for the general population. The tribe honors Memorial Day and our fallen every day of the year because we can't forget about it, right? So
right.
I don't know how I had such a brilliant epiphany about all this. It might be maturity. Yeah, go figure. But, you know, so I thought, you know what? I mean, they're ignorant, you know, and what is, you know, Jesus's, quote from the cross, Father, forgive them for they know not what they say. Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. One of those, something like that. But it's ignorance. And so it's the opportunity to educate. And if you put yourself in the mode that, you know, they are ignorant, they simply haven't been touched by it the way that we've been touched by it. And once you do pull the curtain back, they get it. They get it. It bothers them, but they get it. And so we're kind of in the support mode for Memorial Day. So I'm saying that and in the guise of, and this is who I said Happy Memorial Day to, who kind of didn't respond to it because he thought I'd just been an idiot. And, right, but it is kind of a little bit of satire. Hey, Happy Memorial Day. And then guess who tweets Happy Memorial Day to everybody?
No. The Prez? No.
The real Donald Trump.
Oh man, I had somebody tell me that when I was at the beach on Sunday, and I'm like, you know, not the point.
Fake news,
not
right?
not my day, and not the point. This isn't the happy day.
You know the, but did you do what me and a buddy of mine Ty did? In that I thought he didn't do that, and I looked at the byline. That can't be him, right? And I'm thinking,
I cannot be surprised. I'm not surprised, but yeah, that's
no, but let me
you didn't win that one by Kelly.
What I said is that's Kelly's fault. Okay? That's Kelly's fault. He gets blamed for that. The sixth step in troop leading is to supervise. Okay?
Right.
And Kelly, what in God's name, okay, what's he doing? Oh, so he thinks he gets a 3-day weekend too? Sorry, look, supervision is continuous, man. You're responsible for that guy. Police it up. What the hell?
I saw some photographs of what General Kelly was doing on Memorial Day. Did you see those?
I had some a friend of mine, somebody who's been on the program, was at Arlington and ran into him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he was at Arlington, you know, doing what Gold Star families do on Memorial Day. So insulated yourself. Is that the right word? I'll ask you the general question. How do you deal with it?
On Memorial Day, it's always a big day of the year for me because it's the NCAA lacrosse championships, and I tend to watch those. My fledgling Marine Corps League detachment handed out.
Hold on. The recalcitrant one, Duffy White, joins the program now. Duffy White, Colonel, United States Marine Corps. When Lynch and I were captains at the basic school, Duffy was a lowly first lieutenant. But the worst part about it is that much like Sean Connery in the movie The Wind and the Lion, right? He did not know his place as a first lieutenant. He had a
correct you, brother.
What?
I'm junior to Duffy. So when Duffy was already a captain, I was a first lieutenant SPC with him. And he let me know that I was a junior guy. It was never
he
any
did,
question about
he
that.
He didn't accept that he was junior. See, this is my
that's what I'm saying.
This is my problem with Duffy. So Duffy, on that, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, thanks for that warm, loving introduction there, Mac. I didn't recognize rank. I just recognized ability. So if I treated you shabbily, it was probably well deserved.
There you go. See? And it's shit like that that made, and he wonders why he doesn't have any friends now. Like, why don't I have any friends?
I know that's why I didn't.
I thought I was his friend until I saw him in Afghanistan. And I'm not. I got to live with that. And I love Duffy, but that's just the way it is.
All right, so we're going to do a little bit of a Nash session, things that we used to get together, and we worked with an awesome group of officers. I don't know how many there was, 30 or 40 or 50 at the basic school. I don't know how many total captains, and most of them are infantry guys. But we worked with a really unique group of smart and irreverent. I mean, they showed no respect at all, and Duffy's emblematic of that. Duffy, I want to ask you a question. When you heard about this tweet, what were your thoughts? Okay, we'll see. And can you tell me who tweeted this and what were your thoughts? Happy Memorial Day! Exclamation mark. Those who died for our great country would be very happy and proud at how well our country is doing today. Best economy in decades, lowest unemployment numbers for blacks and Hispanics ever, all caps, in parentheses, and women in 18 years, close parenthetical, comma, rebuilding our military and so much more. Nice. So first of all, can you attribute that to anybody? He's a public figure, and
let me see. I know it was not General Mattis.
Correct. You're right about that. Any other guesses?
Oh, I think I could probably guess the president.
So
correct?
That would be correct. Had you heard of that?
I haven't.
Okay. When I heard it, my daughter showed it to me, and I immediately went to, that's fake news, right? He didn't do that. And then I look, and bigger than shit, it's from his Twitter account. Well, how do you do Memorial Day, Duff? Do you participate? I was talking with Tim before you came on. And I said one of the things that's really helped me is to know that this event is not a tribal event. It's not for us. It's for the general population, and they're largely ignorant. So we're in the support mode. We educate over Memorial Day to try to get them to understand something that the majority of them do not. And for whatever reason, I find peace in that place of ignorance. It doesn't bother me as much as it used to, because it used to piss me off. How do you do Memorial Day?
Well, actually, I'm a member of the Middle Tennessee Military Officers Association, and so we do a memorial service at the Middle Tennessee Veterans Cemetery. The Boy Scouts come in early in the morning, put up all the flags, actually on Saturday morning, so they're there the whole weekend, and we do our memorial. We have support from the Navy recruiting command. They bring in a color guard, bugle for taps. We lay wreaths for each service, kind of remind everybody of the history of it used to be Decoration Day, and started at the towards the end of the Civil War.
Right.
And then we wind up, very simple, dignified, straightforward, and honoring the dead. And then actually, I'm in a club now where we have, unfortunately, members die every year. So we mention them by name, the club members that have passed away, because we've got World War II, Korea, Vietnam era veterans in the club. And then, Sunday, actually, our church, the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic, practicing Catholic, they did a aftermath. They did a memorial service for all the war dead. And then actually, yesterday, my wife and I did a Memorial Day bike ride. During the thing, they were honoring those, the names of people that that the riders knew that had died. So It was pretty simple, straightforward, but just to remember those that have paid that huge price, and that as long as they're remembered, that they'll never be forgotten.
I went down to San Mateo at Camp Pendleton, and the 5th Marines Vietnam War Memorial was dedicated. Probably about 1,200 people, 100 Gold Star families from Vietnam. And General Eric Smith, Major General Eric Smith, Division Commander, was there. And very cool, a ton of Vietnam vets who fought under the battle colors of the 5th Marine Regiment. 2,700 Marines and Navy Corpsmen killed under the 5th Marine battle colors alone. These guys raised $400,000 for this monument, and it's if you get a chance, check it out. Just Google it online; you'll see pictures of it. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And so went down there, and very cool. Very cool to be in the company of those, Vietnam veterans. Man, you hang out with them. They have a couple drinks. You're ready. Get ready, man. Grab the little kids and your wallet, because there's some shit that's going to go on. Because the Vietnam veterans are not afraid to have a good time, and they got issues. So once they start drinking, it all comes out. So it's a good time. It's a good time. So I did that yesterday. It was awesome. Here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the Marine Rifle Squad. I'm going to play some audio from the Commandant. Okay, and this is him selling. So the Marine Rifle Squad is the video. The audio explains it. So everybody stand by, and then we're going to talk. We're going to kind of kick this thing around. Does it make sense going from three four-man teams to 3 3-man teams and a plus-up headquarters? But here's the Commandant on why we're doing it.
Marines, we're making the Marine Rifle Squad more lethal, agile, and capable, and here's how.
Currently, an infantry rifle squad is run by a squad leader with 3 fire teams, each composed of a fire team leader, an automatic rifleman, an assistant automatic rifleman, and a rifleman. The new 12 Marine squad will drop the rifleman and assistant automatic rifleman billets, appoint a committed grenadier to each fire team, and add 2 new positions to the squad headquarters, an assistant squad leader and a squad systems operator. So,
Power 12 Marines, more lethal than 13. Current squads are organized around 3 automatic weapons. Future squads will have 12. Equipping every Marine with an automatic weapon equates to a 300% increase in firepower. Let's meet the squads. The squad leader, a sergeant who leads Marines and carries out orders issued by the platoon commander. An assistant squad leader, a corporal who helps the squad leader with increasingly complex squad operations. A squad systems operator, a lance corporal who integrates and operates new technology. 3 fire team leaders. Corporals, who carry out orders to the squad leader while observing and controlling their fire team. 3 grenadiers. Lance corporals, who effectively employ grenade launchers. 3 automatic riflemen. Lance corporals, who effectively employ automatic rifles. The squad will also be equipped with a MAZ, a squad designated marksman rifle, a quadcopter, a Prick 117 Gulf radio, a Marine Corps common handheld tablet, and a squad rangefinder.
To be clear, the mission of the Marine Rifle Squad remains unchanged, to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy by means of fire maneuver and close combat. Appreciate your support. We're going to move forward and get ready for the next fight wherever it is.
Hoo-ah, Marine Corps. Okay, Tim, your thoughts on the changes in the Rifle Squad?
Well, as not addressed by the by that message, but in the the literature that's been released on in the newspapers, I've got one question: how do you reduce an outfit size but make it more capable by giving it increased responsibilities? I just that one right there kind of stumps me. I don't like it myself. I don't like it at all.
Why?
But I don't understand it. Because I've never seen a TO Dan Rifle Squad. I mean, I take that back. When the first NUSOC we did out of Pendleton, they clustered us all up so that we had TO Rifle Squads. Not a, I was a platoon commander. Out of my 3 squad leaders, one was a sergeant, and he was actually not even the best one. I had 2 corporals. I've never seen a TO unit in the field that's been in the field for a while, and you guys may have better data on that than I do. So the purpose of having that large squad structure was to be able to function in the face of taking casualties and losing people when you did amphibious landings. That's the basis of it. And where it served us well is we've been able to function even though we've lost manpower to various things. Hell, you get on a ship and you're gonna lose squad members to the ship's platoon, for Christ's sakes.
Right.
I mean, you get them back if you go ashore. But to me, that the larger squads give you the ability to sustain yourself in the face of casualties, and I don't understand how you're gonna. I don't like the idea of everybody being an automatic rifleman. I kind of like the idea of the basis of fire maneuver being around a designated automatic guy. I don't care about the platform necessarily, just the capabilities. And they throw a Carl Gustav in there. That's another 14 pounds, 10 pounds around. Nice weapon, but I like I said, you know, when you start talking about we're going to make them more lethal and increase their capabilities and responsibilities, but we're taking away a guy, I don't believe it. There's something because it just doesn't seem to ever work out that way in the field.
Okay, why do you got to do the dumb voice when you did that little audio cut you just put into yourself?
I didn't do that intentionally.
That was not dumb guy voice? Duffy, did you think that was dumb guy voice?
No.
You didn't?
No, that's radio voice. No. I can't hear Duffy, by the way. So when Duffy talks, I mute this out and put on the live stream.
Oh, you can't hear Duffy talk?
No. Duffy, I can't hear Duffy.
Well, he hasn't spoken in a minute. When he spoke before, when he spoke before, you didn't hear?
Yeah. Hey, Matt,
no. I've got you live on my computer, so I mute the phone and you got me the computer. It's a little bit of a delay.
Oh, well, that's
but all. It makes it impossible to give him shit, though.
Yeah, I can't depressing. Hear Tim when he's talking.
Okay, hold on. Okay, hold on. All right. Can you guys hear each other now? Say something, Duff. Hello?
Hey, test 1, 2.
How about now, Tim? Can you hear him now? That's awesome. We just lost Lynch.
Yeah, and I can't hear. I couldn't hear.
Oh, no. That was Lynch on mute. Lynch hears nothing now fine.
Okay.
And I got Lynch. My world is good. I can hear Lynch.
Okay. So. All right. Did you think he was doing dumb? Oh, you didn't hear him before. He kind of slid dumb voice in there. All right, Duck, your thoughts on Nine-Man Rifle Squad. I was pretty surprised when they went to that number because they experimented with a lot of different configurations in the whole Sea Dragon 2025 thing. Your thoughts on a 12-man rifle squad, 12-marine rifle squad?
Yeah, my thoughts are actually when I was a lieutenant rifle platoon commander assigned to the 1st Marine Brigade, we actually had three-man fire teams, and it was all a budget thing because, you know, Hawaii was a pro-share command, meaning we were only going to get 85% of our table of organization. And so they just recognized that, and they were running five-man squads. And if you remember when we were all lieutenants, three-man fire teams, when we were all lieutenants, the Marine Corps changed to an 11-man squad, and we had 2 5-man fire teams for a while.
I was a captain.
And
I was a captain. When you boots were doing that, I was a captain, just so everybody knows.
Yeah. You were on sea duty probably after your third shit cannon in the fleet some more. But
I was.
But no kidding. I heard what the commandant said, and I know you can add different weapons and systems and things like that. But to me, the article talks about the bean counters won this fight, and they're using Marine riflemen to pay for cyber force and other things across the MAGTAF.
Right.
And I just think, that's the wrong way to attack it. And,
well, okay,
but
so,
it's
so,
always been that. It's so, always been that way.
Right.
And it's, to me, it's having more automatic weapons doesn't mean that you're going to be able to suppress the enemy or kill the enemy any more effectively. You still got to train them to shoot and everything. And just one other thing that I'll say is once upon a time when I was working at Headquarters Marine Corps, I was the infantry occupational sponsor.
Whoa.
And we did some cradle to grave building of the reconnaissance MOS, and then the later than the light armored recon MOS. And when you pull out 650, whatever the exact number is, of junior Marine infantry 0311s, you're going to get a screwed up, they called it an enlisted skill grade flow rate. And it's the pyramid. And it's how you shape that MOS to grow. You got to have enough E1s to E3s to make enough E4s to make E5s to make E6s to make E7s. And I'm just hopeful they are all over it and they figured out how to do it. But if you pull that large a number out of it, Mac, I'm telling you, it could get back to the old days of the 80s when you'll get, first term Marines reenlisting and they've never been in zone for corporal. You know, I used to get Marines coming in, checking in as senior lance corporals, and they're on their second enlistment already.
Right.
It there could be some second and third order effects unless it's
hey, is that a bad thing though, Duff? Hey, what is that noise? Lynch, are you like hanging out in a bird cage or what the hell is that noise?
No, I'm in the backyard, man. There's birds. I'm in Texas, bro. There's birds everywhere.
Oh, okay. All right, just checking. Is that a bad thing, yeah. Duff? I mean, because it seems to me, given the quote-unquote the complexity of peer-to-peer combat, is it a bad thing if the Marine Corps gets older?
You'll have to see, how many of those guys are going to reenlist. And you're going to get them into their second enlistment if they never even sniffed NCO yet.
Right.
I mean, you just gotta play with it to see. But, I mean, there are some definite red flags that should be apparent to the smart folks at like Total Force Structure Division and Manpower and all that. And then I will tell you, when I got to Hawaii, as I had a staff sergeant, I had 3 sergeant squad leaders, and I had 6 corporals, and I had 4 lance corporals, per squad.
Wow.
And you couldn't even do firewatch. I mean, you could do it, and it's just that's just garrison. That has nothing to do, and the article does point out, you know, you start taking casualties, you start doing 24-hour ops, you know, go walk two patrols a day plus stand guard plus do working parties back at your, you know, your platoon fob or company cop or wherever you are. You're talking, you know, running on empty real quick, without those extra hands. So I'm all for fighting smarter, but, it just seems like the more things we throw in on top of it, you know, to take a, rifleman out of every fire team is a heavy price to pay.
Okay, the obvious question when you look at this from a manpower perspective is are we doing this as a short-term fix, knowing that the plan is to add that Marine back into as soon as we can afford it? Duff, your thoughts on that? And then Tim, after, do you think
the smart guys at manpower have a way to build a table of organization where there used to be a thing called an X code where they would keep, let's just say for this argument, that extra rifleman and every fire team on the TO, but it would be X coded out. But when you go to war, that gets rebuilt and then they start producing that amount.
Got it.
So, my assumption is that that's what they've done, but I didn't see that in any of the readings or any of that kind of stuff. There are ways to do that. And that would make sense if you got to make a compromise and meet somebody in the middle, that would be a way to do it where you're not cutting your throat as you're in combat. You're just sucking it up in garrison.
Well, you know, and to me, that would make sense because, a 15-man rifle squad with these two extra bodies then does allow you to take casualties. It does allow you to stay close to your TO if you're manned at it. Even when you, because look, when you go to war, you do give people up, right? What's that? Just say the regimental headquarters doesn't secure them enough unless they've been augmented in some way, shape, or form. So guess what? There's a tax that comes down to you as a battalion, as a company, as a platoon, as a squad, and that means bodies going someplace to do something. And so you don't go to war without supporting it like that. And so to me, that's why the 9 number kind of got my attention. Was like, wow, that's awful small. I hope the plan is to go to 15, and then to me, I like that. I like that because you do have flexibility, and you can take your headquarters element guys, and they can become. There's no reason they can't be fire team leaders, you know, if you need them to. And so, so it's flexible. Tim, thoughts on that?
Yeah, the only thing about plussing up in combat is, you know, when we were doing this at the company grade level, it wasn't that expensive to outfit a guy. You know, what are you talking about? A Kevlar? A flak and a rifle, but now those guys have got a hell of a lot more gear, and I don't know how easy it's going to be to start just throwing bodies in, when you've got to talk about you know night vision optics and individual radios, quadcopters and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to be as easy as it once was.
Well, I didn't mean to plus up. I meant at a future date, when the budget looks different, that we can buy those 700 bodies back and keep them in there. I don't mean plus up before you go to combat. Duffy meant that when he talked about X billets, but that's not what I meant.
Yeah, no, I think that in the near peer environment, you're going to have to. For all the reasons that Duffy just highlighted,
right,
and the ones that we know well, which is that you lose people. You lose people for all sorts of reasons, and you're going to have to get plussed up, or you're going to be running two squads in a platoon.
Well, there's the next question. Here's an email question. The Carl Gustav, now, that used to be carried by the assault Marines. I know those have gone away, and now that's been given to the squad. I'm not a genius, but it sounds like the squad's going to be a pretty busy place. First of all, We have to find the goddamn helicopter when it lands someplace, right? Who's going to go do that? The genius that operates our technology? He won't be able to find his ass in a dark room. He's a dork, so the rest of us are going to have to go find it. All right? We also have an iPad for fire support. Good luck with that. Does it still work once you fall into a creek? I'd be surprised if it does. Is that son of a bitch waterproofed? This is crazy stuff to me. It's Buck Rogers that comes and meets the Marine Rifle Squad. Duffy, your thoughts on that stuff?
Hey, Mac, I am. I can't even get my computer on my desk in my office that's got, you know, 100 megabits per second transfer rate to work half the time. So I absolutely, you know, hey, I've been out of the game now for, you know, last time I was deployed was 2009. So hopefully things have changed dramatically since then, but I guarantee you, I would not be betting the farm on that stuff working in the middle of Helmand Province at the end of 30 days with no resupply or anything like that. I mean, we couldn't even get new uniforms to guys, when we did our big attack into Helmand in 2009. I mean, it was, you know, can you get cold water? Can you get any water? Can you get batteries? You know, and I, you know, it was about as basic as you could get, but that's the kind of stuff that the Marines have to be able to survive in. And if it's, you know, I don't want us to learn incorrect lessons from the way we've been fighting. You know, when the well-developed, you know, kind of, fight that we've been in and then make, you know, no kidding, TOTE changes that hamstring us later down the road.
All right, Tim, any thoughts?
Yeah, you're inviting in, as Duffy just said, more friction. I mean, self-generated friction, and friction is hard enough to deal with on the battlefield as it is when things are relatively simple. And so, when you start increasing the complexity of your most basic tasks, that friction's going to rise up and bite you in the ass. And I just don't see how that's to our benefit. You know, I liked it big. I liked it simple, because that seemed to work for us very, very well. And I just can't see how this is going to not introduce even more friction at a lower level. Cause normally in the ops that we've been doing and what I was familiar with, and I've been at a lot longer than Duffy, the friction was at the platoon level, where at least you had, if you had a good platoon commander, you had somebody that could deal with it. Now you're putting friction down at the sergeant level, whose level of experience may or may not be that. I mean, that's just a lot to ask for some awfully junior guys. And I'm not saying that they're not capable of doing it. Hell, when I was running around your AO, Mac, with General Furness, shit, those little combat outposts you had, there were Lance Corporals in charge. I mean, the guy's been in 3 years time in service, you know, running these little outposts, so they can do it. But they had a hard enough time keeping their stupid generators going, as Sergeant Major Zickenfuss was awfully fond of pointing out. So it's that's the one part I don't like.
My guests today are Tim Lynch, whose voice you just heard, Major Infantry Guy, United States Marine Corps, and Duffy White. That's not a nickname. That's his given name. Colonel, United States Marine Corps retired, infantry type. Here's another email, and you can both react to this. The squad is a pretty busy place, for the love of God. You have a pad. You have your own radio now. You have a drone of some sorts. It used to be your squads were totally focused on the task in front of them, and I thought that was a good thing. Now you have the squad leader looking at what? I'm not really sure. You have the assistant squad leader, if he stays and doesn't get put into a fire team leader billet, which I would certainly do to keep my teams at TO, as soon as I lose somebody, he's going in there. My tech guy, I've got to keep that dork next to me so we can find the drone whenever it lands and he loses it. It seems to me a lot of distractions, in addition to the weight of the Carl Gustav. Now, that means we're all carrying rounds, I would think. Those things aren't light. And then there's the weight of the weapon system itself. And who carries that? Do we have a designated Marine? That seems obvious to me that we would have one. Thoughts, Duff? Hello?
You got me. Every one of those things are 100% relative. And I tell you, the fog and the friction that self-induced in this case that Tim brought out and this guy's kind of expanded on is key. I just that's that violence of action and just being able to make a decision and attack and destroy the enemy is what the rifle squad's all about. And you know, the ability then for the platoon commander, I just don't see, was this because the platoon, you can't operate a squad independently for very long. So what does this do to the platoon and then the company level operations? And you know, you can put a lot of that stuff back in coordination with the squad, you know, take away from the squad leader and put it back up at the platoon level. So who can look at the whole frontage of the platoon, and you could maintain that speed and violence of action at the squad level. But I mean, to me, you know, going from straight leg infantry to LAR, you know, you have that wheeled mobility and lethality of the 25 millimeter chain gun and all that, where you can absorb some of that. But the rifle squad, I mean, how big is the frontage now they're talking about? I mean, just the basics of employment, it doesn't seem to make sense if you're giving up the things that the email and Tim just pointed at.
You know, it's interesting, Duff, that you talk about independent ops for a squad, because when I think about it, if you showed me this and said, okay, I'm not going to tell you what unit it is, but we're building a unit around this stuff. What is this unit gonna do? My conclusion would be it's gonna operate independently. If I looked at the comm, if I looked at the weapons, and look at the things that you have, this thing is built to operate independently. And so, good question. So is that what we see? That the modern battlefield is gonna be so lethal that the squad's gonna operate independently or at distance from the platoon? With a grand total of 12 people, if we're TO, and probably it's going to operate with 10 or less. It's interesting in terms of the way this thing is conceived in this, you know, this peer-to-peer fight. Tim, thoughts on that? You know, squads operating independently and the way this thing's been built.
I'm not a big proponent of it. I mean, I've seen some awesome squad leaders, who you could give a task to and send them on their way, without any problem whatsoever, but not so far on their way that you're not back there ready to reinforce them almost damn immediately. I mean, I like the idea of the platoon being the basic maneuver element, and there's plenty of people that would argue that's too junior and too small.
Right.
And I mean, that Carl Gustav, that's a 14-pound piece of gear, so it's sort of like everybody's humping an AT-4, except where it's got optics on it. And you know that's going to get banged up, and the rounds are 10 pounds each. Who's carrying the 60 mortar rounds? That's a lot of weight that you're adding on, too. Thinking that you're going to let squads go out and act independently, I just don't see that being a viable mode of operation.
All right. I want to ask you a question about comm, and then it actually comes out of an email. And then I want to ask you a question that these Marines are younger than the Marines we have, right? Because everybody makes rank faster now. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, first-term corporals. and sergeants that are junior in their second term, and with all this shoved at them. I mean, they're I won't say I don't use the term novice in any type of editorial way. I just say in terms of time around the organization and this stuff, they haven't been there very long, and you're asking an awful lot. Now, let me tell you, there's been an awful lot of novice Marines that have done great shit in our history, so it's not beyond them. But institutionally, that's what we're driven to. Email. My question revolves around COM. The platoon, obviously, is going to be better tied in with COM, given the communications assets now down at the squad. I read that the Marine Corps is now working on helmets that will have embedded in them assets like special forces operators use, and so the whole squad will be tied in together relative to COM. I'd be curious about your thoughts on this and how this changes the dynamic. All right. COM, when you're that connected, does it change things? Does it make them more capable of operating independently? Because they're really not independent if I can talk to them. Or I'll go back to what Tim says. Even our good squad leaders required rudder steer on occasion from a good platoon sergeant and a good platoon commander. Hey, no, not that, this. And if they're further away, you're not going to be able to give that rudder steer. It's going to come in some other fashion. Your thoughts on COM and squads operating at greater distances?
For me, Mac, the first thing that comes up with is it bogs you down and teaching Marines to speak efficiently and effectively on the radio is not an easy thing. And if every man in a rifle squad can talk, they will talk, and talk about friction, you know, exponentially increasing dramatically if that happens. The next thing, COM, for me, is fire support coordination and deconfliction of fires. And now you've got, you know, obviously greater frontage, greater independence of maneuver by the squads. And now if they're whatever, you know, you know, iPad that's going to be calling in fires, how in the world is that going to be deconflicted at the company and battalion regimental level? Because there were ROE back in 2008, 2009, directed by COM ISAF that made me, as the regimental commander, the final authority on whether that thing was going to get fired or not.
Right.
And I could just see it becoming freaking, you know, pick whatever your favorite highway is out there in L.A., and that'll look like what it's like trying to get fires cleared, priorities, who's got the you know, all of that stuff, who can deconflict that all efficiently and be able to provide accurate fires on target. We're going to turn into the Army if we're not careful and be just very slow and methodical and no longer be able to integrate the fires on the move and you know, lean into them as we are, because you're going to be swamped in the COCs, and you've got more experience than I do at that, Mac. But those are the first two things that come to mind. You know, sometimes you don't want everybody to be able to talk on the same net. Over.
Tim, your thoughts.
Well, we don't have to create a scenario where that's a bad idea. We had one with Dakota Myers when he won his Medal of Honor. That unit that was going into that stupid Ganjigal village had one freak. It was one of the reasons why Dakota Myers was back with the trucks, because he was bitching about it, saying we can't do this. We can't be all on the same freak. And when they got their asses hammered, What happened with the radio, with the radio net? It completely failed. I mean, they got one fire mission out all day long because nobody could understand what the hell was happening. I don't like the idea of everybody being able to talk on a radio at all. And they've also said, with that reading that you sent, that they're going to put a Prick 117 down at the squad level. That's a big, heavy piece of gear, man. That's more weight, too. Lots of capability, But Jesus, as a squad's running around with prick 117s talking to everybody on the battlefield, I'm not seeing that as being the way to go.
My guest, Tim Lynch and Duffy White. Talk about younger. What are the implications of the Marine Corps? Because again, I think when in the 80s, and Duffy Duffy was talking about it. You know, I had Lance Corporals. You know that. You know, they didn't pick up. They didn't even think about picking up Corporal in their first term. You know, at the beginning of your second term, you as an infantry guy, you got promoted to Corporal, and they were like, they had a chip on their shoulder to be a Corporal. It wasn't too much rank for them. They'd been chewing on it, but now we're very different. You know, you're pretty much going to be a corporal in 2 years. You're going to be a sergeant. You know, not, you know, 4 years, 5 year mark. You're going to, and it's, so everybody's younger. Your thoughts on this stuff? This is complex stuff, very young. And, you know, and historically the boat spaces at our schools haven't existed to support this kind of stuff. Or at least the formal education piece of this hasn't been there to support.
Well, and I'll speak to you from an example of 3rd Marine Regiment. You know, we're so geographically distant from our division headquarters. You know, my predecessors had formed their own regimental schools. It was there when I was a lieutenant in the regiment. And then whenever I came back, regimental commander, I realized, though, that the expense of, we were having our own certified scout sniper training course, squad leader training, you know, and that was really how I could get these young guys, because over 50% of my NCO billets were not NCOs, they were Lance Corporals. So I'd get a smart Lance Corporal right out of his first deployment to send him right to squad leader school. And it was the only way to accelerate that learning curve. And, you know, but you're still talking about a one deployment Lance Corporal, even though it was a combat deployment, now having to be that corporal role or sergeant role, you know, with just a twisted knee, you know, and, you know, that is a tall order to ask from anybody. And the other thing what I saw was we were getting by with our training cadre based on getting in these huge dumps of new Marines and having guys stay a little bit longer. So I tried to establish, and I did, a relationship. Fred Padilla was the SOI West commander. And so they kind of came in to get some institutional money and personnel and staffing for that to make sure that it could always be professionalized. But unless you're willing to, you know, add more, you know, now you're talking more tooth to tail, and you got to add more tail to be able to train the tooth to be as sharp as it can. And, you know, you're like, I don't know. That is always going to be a losing game, to me. And, you know, you'll be lucky if you just break even as an operational commander.
Tim, your thoughts, younger. That's a huge challenge in all of this. We're talking about more complex and younger.
Right, and for Duffy at the 3rd Regiment, for the guys in Pendleton, putting up regimental schools is going to be one way to solve that. But try pulling that in Camp Lejeune, where you've got 3 regiments side by side on a fronting a river and limited training areas in which to do regimental schools. You know, so the 8th Marines guy can't do what Duffy did when he had 3rd Marines.
Yeah, but Duff, would you argue that he doesn't need to because of the proximity of the other schools, or would you argue that everybody needs to do it because you're going to talk about Lance Corporals if you want them to be effective? Everybody needs to do it.
I would say, and that, I guess that was my point I was trying to make, was you got to plus up the existing schools to increase the capacity of students, or you gotta build those other schools that Tim's talking about. That you, the current structure, you know, you gotta look and analyze what is the throughput and how are we gonna get these guys up on steps to be able to do those things. And the current, as I understand it, the current structure and everything is not going to get us there. Right. So you got to do one or the other. And you're right, just from what I understand of Camp Lejeune, you know, you can't, there isn't enough drinking areas for everybody. I mean, there barely is 29 Palms. You know, if you're talking training 7th Marines plus the, you know, the deploying units and all that stuff, it's always a fight for range time.
Always. Always. And as a, and right, we all know 29 Palms is a big base, but as soon as the, you know, the whatever we're calling it now, the ITX, it's, as soon as that thing rolls into town, everything's taken. And then if you're a resident, you know, you struggle. I used to solve that by reaching out to guys I knew that were coming out and said, hey man, you want an extra maneuver element in your CACs? And everybody, they'd probably be, oh, yeah. Okay, well, let me shoot some of your 25 millimeter and some of your mortar ammunition and a couple toes, and you can have my company as a separate maneuver element. And a lot of them said, yeah. And it was, you know, guys I knew from Quantico. But Duffy's right. Final thoughts. Your biggest concern relative to this move to the 12-man rifle squad and 3-man fire teams. Tim?
Well, if I'm understanding what the commandant's saying is he's going to guarantee that every squad leader goes to school and there's going to be more opportunities for formalized training. And now you're talking T2 and P2 as far as your manpower equations. And I would be shocked if they sat there and worked those numbers out, because that's expensive. That's expensive, and that's the one thing I know that we didn't have when I was in the fleet was a lot of extra money to be sending people to schools, and because you're, I mean, that's a manpower loss, right? The guys he's in training, he's you know, he costs money to send them there.
Right.
I just don't see us having that much money, because it appears with this equipment you're trying to create a little special operations team.
Yeah.
But the one thing about special operations teams, and they're a mixed bag, and we've talked about that before, Mac. The one thing about them is those guys spend a lot of time going to school. They don't have money issues. Where all I remember from my active duty experience in the fleet was money issues. You know, that was always a driving factor in every damn thing we did.
All right.
So I'm just, it makes me nervous.
All right. Duff, your final thoughts on this.
I agree with Tim, but I won't provide reinforcing fires. My biggest thing, and y'all have brought it up, is the increased weight. And I know that article that came out talking about caseless ammo, new generation body armor, all this stuff. Well, here's my example. The Marine Corps probably 12 years to develop the lightweight 155 to get rid of the M1908. Toad howitzer.
Yep.
And in that, they shaved, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars in this program, and they shaved off 2 tons. And in that exact same time, the prime mover changed from a 5-ton to a 7-ton truck. So the net gain for the Marine Corps after a decade and multi-million dollars was a truck that was too damn big to fit on the amphibs and no weight savings at all. Now, those 7 tons of MTBRs could take an IED like a champ. But so there was some good came out of it. But that's, you know, I'm saying that every morning when I wake up and my back doesn't move, and I didn't walk nearly the number of patrols that an enlisted Marine did and all that, I'm like, we are going to break these guys down, carrying extra, you know, mortar rounds, Carl Gustav rounds, you know, you name it. Yeah. It's going to become, you know, and then you're asking them to fight and maneuver and move, you know, at the speed of sound. I think, Tim, and I'm sure you've got more examples than this, but when we were operating around NAUSAD and we could intercept there, the bad guys push to talk, they would call the Marines from 3-8, who was my GCE at the time, the crabs. The crabs are coming. We finally got it looked, you know, they were so heavy and weighted down with crap on a patrol, and now that when you knew you were going to get contact, that you walked like a damn crab. And I don't see that changing with this. I'm 100% dead wrong, and normally I always am, and they're smarter guys than I am in the Marine Corps. So, but there's a lot of, like I said earlier, just red flags that I need to be, you know, you need to be careful of and watch and mitigate every step of the way.
All right. You know, I had Butch Neal on a couple weeks ago, and I did two segments with him, one about his book, What Now, Lieutenant? And then another one about the fight that India 3-9 got into, in which John Lieutenant John Bobo was became the recipient posthumously of the Medal of Honor. And one of the things that has stuck with me about that fight was they were operating in the northern part of I Corps in on March 30th of 1967. For those of you that are familiar with Vietnam, they were operating southwest of Con Tien, and I don't know by how many clicks, might have been 20 or 30 or so, so in that general vicinity. And they saw during the course of their movement during the day a lot of signs of increased numbers of increased numbers activity. So not only activity, but the activity that they saw in terms of footprints, boot prints, things like that, were all heavier and more numerous. So they get ready to set in for the night. They get told to put in three platoon ambushes. And they push back and say, "There's too. Do not advise that. Advise one." And they got told by their battalion, "No, three, do it." And so they did. The field craft of the much lighter NVA, who knew they had to get on you and then attack you quickly and stay close, lest they be annihilated by your supporting arms, was such that the three platoons left. Right, I want to say late in the afternoon, and did not even get set into their ambush position. Butch Neal said, "We had just got to our ambush position when we heard the first mortar rounds walk over the company CP." So the field craft of the NVA was such, and they didn't wear flak jackets, right? They wore those either soft covers or those hats they wore, those kind of sun helmets they wore, and was such that they knew where the platoons were, and they attacked the company CP because they could move. They could move. And we don't do that anymore. You know, what essentially the way we fight is, you know, our infantry guys go out to make contact. When they make contact, you know, a lot of times they're pinned down. And then what happens is our supporting arms show up, aviation in particular, and we annihilate whoever, you know, and hopefully our guys have fixed them. A lot of times our guys are the ones that are fixed, and these guys stay too long. Now, is that going to happen in a peer-to-peer conflict? I'm not sure. But the one thing I know is that we have taken away mobility as a weapon for our guys. And that lesson of the fight is called Gitlin's Corner. It yielded a Medal of Honor, Lieutenant John Bobo, and four Navy crosses. How did that happen in a two-hour fight? Because they were hand-to-hand with the NVA, because that's how quick the NVA got on them, and that's how what they could do, because they used mobility as a weapon. And so that gnaws at me. That gnaws at me. So anyway.
And to reinforce that, Mac, I was up in Nazad, I think it was 2010, doing some work. Rabo and I were up there. And I talked to a company commander who'd been a platoon commander for McManus down in Kunar a couple of years prior. And I asked him, "Why the hell are you guys wearing these helmets and this body armor up in the mountains?" I said, you can't tell me that was a good idea. And he said, "I honestly, there are times during that movement when we were unable to do anything. I mean, we were so sapped and so tired and so worn out getting up and over those mountains that I felt defenseless." And this kid had gone on to be an IOC instructor before he came back out of the company commander. And I said, well, where's the lessons learned? I mean, what do you think should happen? He goes, it doesn't matter what I think. It's mothers of America. You know, you get a Marine killed and he gets shot in the chest and didn't have a sappy plate. you're done. I mean, there's no excuse for that in anybody's eyes. But the amount of casualties we took because we were too overweighted and it was too hot and we shouldn't have been out there moving like that, he goes, that doesn't seem to bother anybody. And I it's one of the things that is discouraging for me from the outside looking in. If I start reading all these books, you know, about written about Afghanistan and whatnot, and I don't see any of this. I see a lot of stuff. There's the Canadian brigade commander just published some book, and it's complete nonsense. I mean, it's you know, every sergeant major is a stand-up guy. All of his, everybody was excellent, and we just we took it to them and kicked their ass. And I'm like, I don't think that's how it went down in Panjshir, bro. But we don't seem to institutionally want to deal with that, because I'm sorry. I've been up and down the mountains in Kunar, and I sure as hell wasn't wearing any body armor. That was all I could do just to stay on my own 2 feet, and I'm carrying nothing but a rifle.
You know? No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Duff, final thought. Duff, put
hey, that. I'm rounds complete, man.
All right. First of all, I want to thank both you guys for taking time today. I appreciate it. Fun talking about these things with smart guys who have a ton of experience. So, Tim Lynch, Tim, have a great day. Thanks. And Duffy, same to you, bud. Thank you very much.
All right.
Hey, thank you. It's good to hear you. Good to hear from you again, Duff.
Hey, it's great to hear you, Tim.
All right, buddy.
All right.
Bye.
More of All Marine Radio. Coming up next, you can hear. And these are guys who have been lifelong infantrymen, and have looked at this stuff. Firepower is great. Technology is great, but what's the right mix? So, interesting discussion. And the way we've all gotten smarter is have these discussions and then go out and solve the RFIs. How do you see this thing working? And what about this extra weight? So we'll talk about, we'll take a quick break. We'll get Gunner on and we'll ask him the same questions. So, more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.